We seem to have less motivation and more distraction, yet our destiny is driven by the same universal engine. Extraordinary people are not a different category. The workings of this engine in them are simply more transparent. That's a quote by psychologist James Hillman, who, by the way, wrote that decades ago. And it's included in Robert Greene's best-selling book, Mastery. And that's what we are doing. We are mastering a craft together. But how do you find your life's calling? How do you know what you're destined to do? Well, let's take a look. Here's what Robert has to say. Discover your calling, the life's task. You possess a kind of inner force that seeks to guide you towards your life task, what you are meant to accomplish in the time that you have to live. In childhood, this force was clear to you. It directed you toward activities and subjects that fit your natural inclinations, that spark a curiosity that was deep and primal. In the intervening years, the force tends to fade in and out as you listen more to parents and peers, to the daily anxieties that wear away at you. This can be the source of your unhappiness, your lack of connection to who you are and what makes you unique. The first move toward mastery is always inward, learning who you really are and reconnecting with that innate force. Knowing it with clarity, you will find your way to the proper career path and everything else will fall into place. It is never too late to start this process. How inspirational is that? It's never too late. And maybe you've just been practicing for a long time, and it's time to put things in motion. There's that saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. That quote I opened the chapter with, Life of Distractions, decades ago. Well, what do you think about that now? This is where it's important to really decide to hone your craft and become the person you're destined to be. Robert Greene opens the chapter with Leonardo da Vinci, famous polymath, and a man who, born out of wedlock, chose his own destiny. He wasn't allowed to go to university. He wasn't allowed to become noble profession back in the day. So he took his time and he mastered so many crafts. That is a luxury in life. And perhaps it was his destiny that he was born out of wedlock. And that's why he became so complete of a person. He continues with a quote in the book from José Ortega Gasset. Keys to mastery. Among his various possible beings, each man always finds one which is his genuine and authentic being. The voice which calls him to that authentic being is what we call vocation. But the majority of men devote themselves to silencing that voice of the vocation and refusing to hear it. They manage to make a noise within themselves to distract their own attention in order not to hear it. And they defraud themselves by substituting for their genuine selves a false force of life. So perhaps you're thinking, well, what is my destiny? Do I really need to work in this factory, this grocery store, this restaurant for the rest of my life? There must be more meaning to life. And that's why mastery is brilliant. Because on the side, you can begin your quest. Just take a moment for yourself. Sit down with yourself, by yourself, and really explore. What were you drawn to as a child? What were you good at that teachers maybe tried to change your mind about? Something to think about. He says, many of the greatest masters in history have confessed to experiencing some kind of force or voice or sense of destiny that has guided them forward. For Goethe, he called it a daemon, a kind of spirit that dwelled within him and compelled him to fulfill his destiny. In more modern times, Albert Einstein talked of an inner voice that shaped the direction of his speculations. Such feelings can be seen as purely mystical, beyond explanation, or as hallucinations and delusions. But there is another way to see them, as eminently real, practical, and explicable. It can be explained, he says, in the following ways. All of us are born unique. This uniqueness is marked genetically in our DNA. We are a one-time phenomenon in the universe. Our exact genetic makeup has never occurred before, nor will it ever be repeated. For all of us, this uniqueness first expresses itself in childhood through certain primal inclinations. And he goes on to say, it might seem that connecting to something as personal as your inclinations and life's tasks would be relatively simple and natural once you recognize their importance. But in fact, it is the opposite. It requires a good deal of planning and strategy to do it properly, since so many obstacles will present themselves. The following five strategies are designed to deal with the main obstacles in your path over time. The voices of others infecting you, fighting over limited resources, choosing false paths, getting stuck in the past and losing your way. Pay attention to all of them, because you will most inevitably encounter each one in some form. So number one, so return to your origin, your primal inclination strategy. And this can be done from a simple object. From, he gives the example of Einstein in his book, when his father gave him a compass. It triggered something. There's these little clues. Life leaves clues and it leaves triggers. So understand, by making this exploration, it's not just thinking, well, what did I get good grades at in high school? Success leaves clues in really interesting ways. And he says, you must understand the following. In order to master a field, you must love the subject and feel a profound connection to it. Your interest must transcend the field itself and border on the religious. And he says, for Einstein, it was not physics, but a fascination with invisible forces that governed the universe. These childhood attractions are hard to put into words and are more like sensations. That of a deep wonder, sensual pleasure, power, and a heightened awareness. The importance of recognizing these proverbial inclinations is that they are clear indications of an attraction that is not infected by your desires of other people. They are not something embedded in you by your parents, which come with a more superficial connection, something more verbal and conscious, coming instead from somewhere deeper. It can only be your own. Reflections of your unique chemistry. Now, that couldn't be more than the truth. So if you are a parent or a mentor of someone, help them to discover their life's task. How do you do that? You explore different things. You try something new. You think your child's meant to be an athlete. Well, what sport? Try them out. See what connects. Maybe they're not meant to be an athlete at all. Maybe they're meant to be a scientist. Maybe you need to go out to nature. It's through this exploration, through this quiet time of thought, that clues are rising to the surface. He goes on to say, it's already there within you. You have nothing to create. You merely need to dig and refine what has been buried inside of you all along. If you reconnect with this core at any age, some element of that primitive attraction will spark back to life, indicating a path that can ultimately become your life's task. How awesome is that? Two, occupy the perfect niche. Now, I think this actually sounds so much harder. Really niche down. Specialty. And by niche, that means that nobody else is necessarily doing it, or they're not doing it as well as maybe could be done. So how do you find your niche? Well, you explore what you enjoy and you build upon it. And it gives the example in the book where you can do this one of two ways. You can decide on your chosen field and you can master that chosen field. And then from there, you can niche it down even further, really become a specialist The second way is to, once you've mastered your specialty, rather than staying on that same path, you master something else. And then you find out how that can combine together, how you can use both those skills in order to have a niche. Well, that's unique to anyone else. It goes on to say, in either direction, you have found a niche that is not crowded with competitors. You have freedom to roam, to pursue particular questions that interest you. You set your own agenda and command the resources available to this niche. Unburdened by overwhelming competition and politicking, you have time and space to bring to flower your life's task. I love that. That's truly commitment. 3, avoid the false path. A false path in life is generally something we are attracted to for the wrong reasons: money, fame, attention, and so on. If it is attention we need, we often experience a kind of emptiness inside that we are hoping to fill with the false love of public approval, because the field we choose does not correspond with our deepest inclinations. We rarely find the fulfillment that we crave. Our work suffers for this, and the attention we may have gotten in the beginning starts to fade, a painful process. If it is money and comfort that dominate our decisions, we are most often acting out of anxiety and the need to please our parents. They may steer us towards something lucrative out of care and concern, but lurking underneath this can be something else, perhaps a bit of envy that we have more freedom than they had when they were young. Your strategy must be twofold. First, to realize as early as possible you have chosen your career for the wrong reason before your confidence takes a hit. Ooh, that hits home, doesn't it? And second, to actively rebel against those forces that have pushed you away from your true path. Scoff at the need for attention and approval. They will lead you astray. Feel some anger and resentment at the parental forces that want to foist upon you an alien vocation. It is a healthy part of your development to follow a path independent of your parents and to establish your own identity. Let your sense of rebellion fill you with energy and purpose. So, what's blocking your path? What's standing in your way? What strategies can you come up with? 4, let go of the past. Oh, that's a toughie, right? He says, in dealing with your career and its inevitable changes, you must think in the following ways. You are not tied to a particular position. Your loyalty is not to a career or a company. You are committed to your life's task, to giving it full expression. It is up to you to find it and guide it correctly. It is not up to others to protect or help you. You are on your own. Change is inevitable, particularly in such a revolutionary moment as ours. Since you are on your own, it is up to you to foresee the changes going on right now in your profession. You must adapt your life's tasks to these circumstances. You do not hold on to the past ways of doing things, because that will ensure you will fall behind and suffer for it. You are flexible and always looking to adapt. And in this day and age, AI now replacing jobs in computing. People who have dedicated their lives to coding and computer science. Did you not feel safe? Did that not feel like a safe, good career choice? Of course it did. This is a great modern day example of how you're going to have to pivot. You're going to have to figure out what you loved about it and how you can reapply it, regroup, retool, and go on that journey. And that's just, I'm just giving you one example, but there's many, many examples where this happens. And like he says, you have to be ready, because nobody's coming to help you. I'm sorry. This is not easy. If change is forced upon you, you must resist the temptation to overreact or feel sorry for yourself. Yeah, Thinking in this way, you can adapt to a new direction within. You don't need to abandon your skills and experience you've gained, but to find a new way to apply them. Your eye is on the future, not the path. Often, such creative readjustments lead to a superior path for us. We are shaken out of complacency and forced to reassess where we are headed. Remember, your life's task is a living, breathing organism. The moment you rigidly follow a plan set in your youth, you lock yourself into position, and the times will ruthlessly pass you by. Oh, that is a harsh one. Okay, Robert, what's next? Number 5, find your way back. No good can ever come from deviating from the path that you were destined to follow. You will be assailed by varieties of hidden pain. Most often, you deviate because of the lure of money, of more immediate prospects for prosperity. Because this does not comply with something deep within you, your interests will lag and eventually the money will not come so easily. You will search for other easy sources of money, moving further and further away from your path. Not seeing clearly ahead of you, you will end up in a dead-end career. Yikes. Even if your material needs are met, you will feel an emptiness inside you that you will need to fill with any kind of belief system, drugs, or diversions. There's no compromise here, no way of escaping the dynamic. You will recognize how far you've deviated from the depth of your pain and frustration. You must listen to this message of frustration, this pain, and let it guide you. It is a matter of life and death. The way back requires a sacrifice. You cannot have everything in the present. The road to mastery requires patience. You will have to keep your focus on 5 or 10 years down the road when you will reap the rewards of your efforts. The process of getting there, however, is full of challenges and pleasures. Make your return to the path a resolution you set for yourself and then tell others about it. It becomes a matter of shame and embarrassment to deviate from this path. In the end, the money and success that truly lasts come not to those who focus on such things as goals, but to rather to those who focus on mastery and fulfilling their life's task. And he says, in reversal, maybe your life task isn't buried in your childhood. Maybe your childhood was just, you were destined for nothing. That's how you felt about it anyways. Get out there and explore. Something is going to pique your interest. Something is going to give you that aha moment. And he goes on to say, when we are faced with deficiencies instead of strengths and inclination, this is a strategy you must assume. Ignore your weaknesses and resist the temptation to be more like others. Direct yourself towards the small things you are good at. Do not dream or make grand plans for the future, but instead concentrate on becoming proficient at the simple and immediate skills. This will bring you confidence and become a base for which you can expand to other pursuits. Proceeding in this way, step by step, you will hit upon your life's task. So he says, understand, your life's task does not always appear to you through some grand or promising inclination. It can appear in the guise of your deficiency, making you focus on the one or two things that you are inevitably good at. Working at these skills, you learn the value of discipline and see the rewards you get from your efforts. Like a lotus flower, your skills will expand outward from a center of strength and confidence. Do not envy those who seem to be naturally gifted. It is often a curse, as such types rarely learn the values of diligence and focus, and they pay for this later in life. This strategy applies as well to any setbacks and difficulties we may experience. In such moments, it is generally wise to stick to the few things we know and do well and to re-establish our confidence. So if you're not feeling the confidence, start with something little and build upon it. You need to build a strong belief system in yourself. Look for all those hidden clues. This power is accessible to everyone. It's within you. You have to take a moment, dive deep, go through those five different ideas. And he said, pay attention to them all. By doing so, finding your life's task and pivoting, you will live a more inspired life. Well, I am jazzed to be sharing this book with you. Do us a favor. Give us a thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel. It helps people find this show. I want as many people to find out about the power of mastery, of the power of finding your life's task, of the power of reaching who you are meant to be. So take the next week, think about, digest, listen to the show, watch it on YouTube over and over and over again, and really start to dive deep. Because next week, we're going to talk about the apprenticeship. I'll see you then.